Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, the Settlings Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However it may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@settlings.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at EverythingCanon. Today in the show, we're talking to Adrian Tooley, author of the great new book, A Sweet and Bitter Magic, her debut in fact. This sapphic fantasy romance book may be a standalone, but the ethereal world-building and strong character work imply that there's more story to tell, not that Adrian holds anything back. A Sweet and Bitter Magic may be just one chapter, but it's a strong chapter and provides enough resolution that should leave most any reader satisfied, but no doubt hungry for more. We talk about her love of music, if she'll ever go back to it, the path it took to get here, A Sweet and Bitter Magic, of course, and what's next for her. Warning, while this is definitely a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out. So, if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always on this podcast, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves, not just one day or one month a year, but all year long. This includes each time we either engage in a conversation online or face-to-face, if we ever do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. Okay, get your maps out. Adrian Tooley grew up in Southern California, majored in musical theater in Pittsburgh, and now lives in Brooklyn with her wife and family of guitars. The reason for all those guitars is that she's a singer-songwriter who has released 3 indie folk EPs, including 2018's The Slow Season. I recommend checking out Secondhand Guns. It's pretty good. She's here today to talk about her debut novel, A Sweet and Bitter Magic, which releases March 9th, courtesy of Margaret K. McElderry Books, and is being described as a charming debut fantasy perfect for fans of Sorcery of Thorns and Girls of Paper and Fire. A witch cursed to never love meets a girl hiding in her own dangerous magic, and the two strike a dangerous bargain to save their queendom. Is this book incredibly saccharine? Yes. Will you love every fucking second of it? I don't know. I did. Please welcome to the show, Adrian Tooley. Hi, Adrian.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
There you go. How was that intro? Okay.
Loved it. Yep. It was great.
All right.
At all my map points and my
you
family.
Did, yeah, you've done some moving. That's okay. We'll talk a bit about that. All good places, though. I lived in Northern California for a few years when I was younger, much younger. God, how long was that? I'm 44, just for context, and I'm not embarrassed of my age, but man, I gotta think. So I was a roadie for punk bands growing up.
And, oh, nice.
So. Did a lot of traveling in my late teens, early 20s, and then lived, and they were from Santa Cruz, California. So I ended up spending a few years there, which I can tell you, I can even be more specific than that. I was in Capitola. So people you from California, I can say that you would know what I'm talking about.
But
God, see, now I'm thinking, oh God, now I feel old all of a sudden. Anyways, so thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And you were just saying that I'm actually your first podcast, and that's very exciting. So that's very cool. And that means you are on the cusp of, you know, an exciting moment in your life. And we'll talk about that because I always like to get a sort of understanding of how you're feeling as a debut author. But, you know, it just dawned on me too, even reading that little intro, and there's, you know, obviously that is not the summation of your life's pursuits and work, but... on paper, you seem like the fucking coolest person in the world. I don't know. You're like a character from a movie or something to me. What's the deal with that? And I assume, is your wife just like equally as cool, or did you marry up? Like, what did you,
what's oh, yeah. She's absolutely cooler than me.
Okay.
100%. Hitched my, wagon to that horse to that wagon.
Yep.
1000%. Yeah. We're like very much like that couple. Which I mean, I
that everybody hates, is that what you mean?
Pretty much, yeah. Like I feel like we're like that couple that if I saw us, or like I saw someone posting like the way that like I post about like how cool my wife is, I would be like, oh, gross, like
barf,
come
yeah.
on, like truly,
yeah.
But since I'm in it, I'm like, this is great.
So Is this, you know, and just we're going to go all over the place here at the beginning. This is the getting to know you part of the interview. Is this like totally left field? exactly how you thought it would go? Like, what's kind of, take me through that process.
Life or the book?
Just the life. No, life. Life in general. Life in general.
Yeah. Definitely not. Like, I grew up in a pretty small town. We had like one bowling alley and like didn't get an H&M at our mall until like I went to college. So there wasn't a ton to do, which is how I kind of found myself in theater. From there I went to college and kind of just kept doing the theater thing. In college, I was like, yeah, this isn't for me anymore in this capacity. And that's actually when I started writing music.
Theater or school?
I went to college for musical theater.
Right.
And while I was studying, I realized that musical theater was like really not
okay
what I wanted to do, but I did want to keep, performing in some capacity. But I was like, maybe if, I used to enjoy singing other people's songs, maybe I would have a better time if I was writing my own.
Mm.
So that's sort of how that happened. I ended up doing what I call dropping out of college with a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only attended for like 2 years, but I'd had enough like AP credits and all that. So I was able to still, get the bachelor's, and then I could move back home, which was never a part of my plan. I was always going to I was going to do my thing. I was going to, be whatever. And I moved back home and I was like, oh God, like all I did in high school was complain about this town and I'm here again. And so I, got a job and I saved up a bunch of money. And as soon as I was starting to get the pricklings of, I need a new adventure, I was like, what if I just bought a one-way ticket to New York and just saw what happens? My parents were not particularly thrilled by that plan of let's see what happens alone in a city.
This just reinforces that you're a character in a movie.
Right. even saying this, I'm like, oh my ticket. God. I'm like rolling my eyes at myself. But yeah, I did. I know, I truly did. I bought a one-way ticket to New York.
You're such a cliche, Adrian. God,
I know.
Your life is a cliche.
I know. It's like one of those indie movies where the girl just like sighs and stares out at her fire escape all the time. But I did. I moved to New York and I got a job at a restaurant because I didn't know anybody and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, well, if I'm going to meet people, surely I'll meet somebody, I'm like working at a restaurant. And I ended up working in hospitality for a good long while. I bartended, I served, I did pretty much everything you can do. I played shows in the city and actually met my wife at an open mic night. She is a record producer. So if you do happen to listen to any of my music, The Slow Season was actually produced by my wife.
No bullshit. Like, I was thinking, I listened to all three EPs yesterday, and I honestly, and I'm again, I'm not fucking, I don't tell lies. I remember thinking, I'm like, wow, the production on this third one is quite a bit better than the other two.
Yeah. She is incredible. She's an incredible musician in her own right. Just an absurdly talented human being, incredible songwriter, incredible musician. And for my purposes is also free. So that's been really great.
Hired.
Exactly. It's like, how can I'll take out the trash if you do this. So it's, yeah. So I'm completely and totally spoiled. We met at an open mic night. We ran in the same circles. She, made a record for me. And as soon as we wrapped, we were like, we should continue to spend time with each other. And then we essentially dated until we got married.
Nice.
So that's kind of what happened. I had always wanted to write long form, but I was always too scared.
That was my question. My next question was going to be sort of like, when did you... did you want to be a writer from very young, or better, were just too scared, or got sidetracked, or for whatever reason? Or was this sort of a late second stage sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I've always been a writer in some capacity.
Right.
When I was really young, I had really bad insomnia, and my mother, who was like just trying to go to bed at night, like got so tired of having to be like, okay, it's time for bed. That she gave me a journal when I was pretty young and was like, okay, like now instead of coming to me, you're gonna write down all the thoughts in your head and you're gonna get them out. So as soon as you put them on paper, they're not in your head anymore. And then you can, you know, put your thoughts to rest and then you can go to sleep. And she kind of unknowingly sparked my like true obsession with journaling. You would always sign me with a notebook in my bag. And it was all very like memoir-esque in the sense that I was, you know, 12 and talking about the people I had crushes on or the friendships that were happening, but I was always writing. And I always wanted to, you know, write a book someday. I was a hugely avid reader. It was always like that secret dream inside of me, but that thing that I was like, well, if I fail at this, like I'll never recover. So if I don't try, I can't fail. Which I don't recommend for people. I really don't recommend that being the way that you deal with your dreams. You should absolutely face them head on and realize that even if you can't fail, you also can't succeed. So that's a little pep talk for past Adrian and for hopefully any listeners who are like, I'm scared, do it anyway, it's worth it. But yeah, so for a long time I had started stories and I had, you know, written little fragments and pieces and I just hadn't ever gotten anything over the finish line. And it really wasn't until a handful of years ago, I want to say 2016, that I finally actually finished writing a book. And as soon as I finished the first one, I was like, oh, well, if I did it once, I can do it again.
Great. And this was, okay, so that was 2016. So was that, is that the book that turned into Sweetener Magic or was that something No.
Okay. No, that's a shelved book. Although I have been toying with, hopefully reviving it again someday.
Understood. This might be a moot point come March 9th, but what's your bigger passion? Do you think, would you rather be a massively successful musician or a massively successful author? I think you're going to be the latter March 9th, but.
I have to admit something embarrassing, which is that I have not written a new song in probably a couple of years.
Okay. I was going to ask you that because 2018 was the last EP. Yeah. So,
yeah. So yeah. I have people who are like, hey, you should do another one. And I was like, I would also like to do another one, but then I would have to finish writing a song. And I think that before I started writing books, like that was my creative outlet. So I was able to, you know, pump that out. And then now that I have kind of transitioned into this more writerly type world, I'm using so many more words than I would when I wrote songs. Mm-hmm. So I think right now the pivot towards writer works. If I can at some point plug my next project though, we will find a way for kind of my two passions to combine.
We will plug your next project, don't worry. Sophie, we're gonna talk about Sophie at the end of the interview. Okay, well listen, you know, well, it's just the thing, right? Because now you're gonna be thrown into this maelstrom of deadlines and pressure and fifth drafts and six edits and all sorts of stuff. So time will become an issue here shortly. But as you know, after you you know, are a massively successful author, you can always go back and pursue some music stuff, right? It's not like it expires.
Exactly. So, right. And again, I live with my producer, so we can make it work.
There you go. Right. And with technology, you can just record on your laptop and you don't even have to put, you can keep your pajamas on for Christ's sake.
Exactly.
All right. So obviously a pandemic is not an ideal time to have a debut novel come out.
No.
So you're not really going to like reap a lot of the benefits of the things that I love to see with that authors reap and that, you know, like these in-person things with people lined up telling you how great you are and how great your book is and how it's changed their life, you know, in this way or that way. So, you know, you don't really know any different, I suppose, but I'm sure you have a lot of author friends who have told you, you know, what was it like pre-pandemic, but how are you sort of getting yourself amped up for what's going to be a lot of things like this, podcasts, virtual panels, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I don't really know any differently. Obviously I've heard, you know, wonderful things about getting to go to, you know, conventions and meet readers and librarians and teachers and educators and all of that is like so exciting. And hopefully someday there will be a place for that in the world again. But on the flip side of that, there has been something really kind of wonderful about how accessible author events are now. Like my family lives all over the place and none of them live anywhere close to New York. So like if I had had a book launch at a New York bookstore, it would have been great. But like my family couldn't have been there. So, you know, now they can tune into my, you know, Instagram live release day conversation and like my grandmother in Portland, Oregon can be a part of it. And, you know, readers internationally can, you know, watch the video later. things that are allowing for, you know, panels with authors all over the world who maybe, you know, couldn't travel places before can now reach those readers. So in a sense, it is disappointing, but I also think that we have a really great opportunity. And I hope that even once kind of the pandemic ends, we find ways to keep this kind of level of inclusion for readers and writers and authors all over the world.
Yeah, I've had that conversation a lot. And that seems to be the sort of the thing everybody leans into, is that, you know, if there is a silver lining, it's the reach is 100 to 1,000 fold now when you do an event online. You know, normally being a panel, maybe in front of a few hundred people, 1,000 if you're lucky. But I mean, obviously the reach with this is as many people in the world that have access to the internet and men, you know, on a computer, right? So yeah, and I, a lot of authors I spoke to the last 12 months have all said exactly the same thing. They kind of hope some of this hangs around for all the reasons you just stated, right? Because not everyone can afford to go to travel across the world to attend conventions or whatever. So just on a more like personal, emotional level, because, you know, I know you don't, you know, these books don't write themselves, and they certainly don't write themselves quickly. No. You know, and it's you know, a lot of time, a lot of effort, time away from your wife, from your friends, from your family. A lot of emotion goes into this stuff. How are you feeling? We're only what did we say? It's the 22nd. I can't even do that math. 17 days away.
Yeah.
A couple weeks away here. How are you feeling? I mean, it's a little too far away, maybe. Like, I know you know you're not going to get any sleep the night before, but how are you sort of feeling about it now?
Yeah, I've been letting anyone who asks know that I'm feeling only slightly unhinged, just slightly.
Yeah, that'll get worse.
Which means there's still room to go. What, for better or for worse, I am also currently on deadline for my second book at the moment. So that has been taking up kind of all of my energy, which has been funny to like realize with the way that publishing works. Like, I'm so focused on this story that people aren't going to read until 2022. Mm-hmm. And the book that people are just about to read, like literally in 2 weeks, is a book that, you know, has been finished and off my radar for now upwards of, you know, what, 6 months.
Yep.
So it's interesting. And I am I continue every day to gain more respect for veteran authors and people who have been publishing for a long time, because just the mental gymnastics and the balls that you're juggling at all times. Like, I didn't realize when I wanted to be a published author that I would spend so much time like resizing images in Canva. Like, I didn't expect that I was going to be just like sending a lot of emails to people. Like, there's so much that goes into this job. And so I think, like, aside from then having another full-time day job, and like, I'm not a parent, but the writers who are doing all of this and are parenting, like, it's a lot.
You're like, where's the magic?
I know. But I think it's so important to know, because it does, there's so much more that happens than you think when you know, watch the glamorous rise to, you know, fame from a debut author. Like, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And now I know, and I tell everyone that ever buys a book exactly what.
Well, that's one of the things we've learned the last year, especially, you know, that wall has been torn down, right? The fourth wall. And we know so much more now about the publishing industry and, you know, than we did before because of that. And we understand now that it is like, that's the game. Right? Like, if you're always thinking of your next one, two, three projects ahead, because that you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, that this industry changes so much. Sure, YA right now is, you know, in a bit of a renaissance period right now, but that could go away. And, you know, then what, right? So, yeah, to your point, I mean, you know, that's the thing. And you're always going to be thinking one book ahead. And I always think that whenever I see like these actors, you know, doing their press tours for a movie that they made like 2 years ago, three years, in most times, right? Because movies take so long to get made. And movies have come out since, you know what I mean? That they're doing press for. And that's going to be the case too, you know, especially as your portfolio gets longer and longer. Okay, Sweet and Bitter Magic. So do you want me to read the summary, or do you want to practice having to answer this question? Because, you know, like we said, you're going to be asked this pretty much every single time.
Yeah, I mean, I have my little like three sentence elevator pitch. So
do it.
Happy. Yeah, so
Either keep in mind, either way,
after you're done, I'm going to ask you sort of like, what's the, like the beating heart of this book, but
fair enough. Okay.
You go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So here's my elevator pitch I'm practicing. So essentially Sweet and Bitter Magic is a standalone YA fantasy, that's filled with whimsy and plays on a fairy tale world. A witch cursed never to love and a girl hiding her own magic reluctantly are forced to team up and search for the origin of a memory stealing plague. On the road, both of those girls face their pasts, which surface in ways they never expect.
Having read the book, I know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly. So yeah, that's the promotional language, and that's well done, perfectly said. Pretty soon you'll just be reciting that. I don't know if you were reading that or what, but you won't have to soon. So that's the promotional language. That's, you know, the summation of this story, but you know, you've lived with this story for much longer than we have. You know, you've slept in that freakishly small single bed that Tasman and Ren had to sleep in one night for some reason. I don't know why there's only one small bed, but anyways, it's beautiful. So you've spent more time with these characters than anybody else. So what's the heart of this book really? Like what do you want people to really get from it?
Yeah. I mean, to me, this book is about feelings. It's about grief and it's about ghosts and it's about the way that different people deal with all of those things. One of the things that I most enjoyed about this book is that it is dual POV. So you really get to see the story, the heart and the feelings and the thoughts and the fears reflected through the eyes of these two very, very different girls. And to me, ultimately, it comes down to sort of the crux of it, which is love. How do you love? What is owed to people from you? How do you deserve to be loved? And I think that there's a lot that we play with along the course of their adventure together, where they start in these two very polar opposite places and end up a lot closer together than either of them, I think, would have expected.
What was the inspiration for this story? I mean, I have to assume you weren't just sitting around being like, I'd really love to write a sapphic, you know, enemies to lovers.
Yes.
Book. That's it. That's my, you know, yes. Was there something specific that jumped in your head? Like, was it, what, maybe the better way to ask is what came first, the story or the characters?
Yeah. I mean, as you said, sapphic witches fantasy is kind of the origin of it. But also I was really interested.
Just because that's what you like to read, or you thought that would make a good story?
I thought it would make a good story. And I also thought that in terms of witch representation, we didn't nearly have enough queer ones for my liking.
Right.
So that, I mean, that right there is a huge kind of like big flashy, like pitchy type thing. But something else that I really wanted to explore was the idea of power, and the idea of you know, who is allowed to have power, who's allowed to use power, and does having power make someone better or worse than someone who doesn't? And I wanted to create a character who was grappling with having almost too much power and the consequence of that, and that's kind of where Tamsin was born from. Because I just think that's such a fascinating idea. And I was able to do a lot with the sort of family dynamic side of that. I don't know how spoilery.
This book is a family squabble, like unlike anything anyone's ever seen. Like it's, there's no doubt about it.
So I wanted to look at the duality of that, the duality of power. And then because we were already looking at the duality of power, Tamsin needed a foil. Not being able to feel anything, you really need someone who can feel everything, maybe too much, maybe all the time.
Right.
So that Tamsin kind of has one foot in two of these different relationships throughout the book. And for me personally, Tamsin was actually the much easier voice to find. I knew her from the get-go. Her first line has always been the same. She was a character that came to me very easily. And Ren was a lot tougher, but I think I love her more for the challenge she posed for me.
Right. rewinding a little bit there, you mentioned something about this, you know, having power and then losing it is such a powerful, I'll say trope, but that's just a great center. That's a good base to start with, right? Anytime you have a character who had such tremendous power and then loses it for X reason, that's a great place to start, right?
Exactly.
You mentioned it too, and this is a big part of the book. And one of the things I really want to talk about it, and I was really actually just talking to Ashley Shuttleworth recently about her awesome book that's coming out tomorrow. Dark and Hollow Star, a little shout out there. Yes. One of her lead characters, similar, it's you play it differently than she does, but in your book, Tamsin has this idea of being heartless is not just an emotional state, but it's actually like a literal physical condition. Mm-hmm. I found it very wretched. Like, I mean, woe be gone, despairing, pick a word. Like, that's punishment, really, for a person. Yes. Like, for someone whose inherent composition is to see and feel the natural world and, like, the very vibrance of it, to take that away, like, that's a real kick in the pants. Talk about, like, this, you know, this idea of being heartless. Again, it's a physical state too, and it's of course emotional, but like, and all that comes with that, like, that struck me as incredibly cruel.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that was the only way that her coven could really see fit to punish her for you know, the act that she did to deserve such a punishment, is that, you know, when you take a look at Tamsin's past, you realize that she cared almost too much. Mm-hmm. And so this is a punishment almost twofold, because now not only can she, you know, never care about anything again, and it's not even just a person, it's literally she can't look out her window and see a sunset. She can't feel the joy of a flower. They've truly taken all feeling from her, leaving her empty and numb. And I think that for someone who used to hold so much in her hands, whether it be love or power, there's nothing worse than just being empty-handed, reaching for even a ghost of the feeling of what once was.
Right. And that's, again, to your, yeah, like her, you know, loving too much, it's a real, like, grapes of wrath vibe there for sure. That's all I'll say about that part. So yeah, again, she's sort of reduced down to her minimum set of skills basically as a witch. But one thing she does do in absence of this having a heart, it's like a drug addict would. I mean, she turns, like, she still needs that to live, and she turns to, well, I just call them love drugs. I mean, basically, right? Like, I don't know what to call them, right? She's like, she's getting her fix, you know, any way she can get it. And when she starts out, you know, one of her sort of rackets in this place she lives in is I'm not going to say scamming, but, you know, definitely taking advantage of the feeble-minded. And, you know, where did that idea come from? Because I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see, again, sort of Tamsin's desperation almost sort of mirrored in the villagers of people who need her. And she has, like, finally found a thing she needs back. I always, in fantasy, I always have such a hard time, like, well, what could a witch possibly need from a normal person? Like, why are they offering their magic anyway? And so for me, there was something so like interesting about having that setup where it's like, she truly needs something from the people she's serving. And like, the payment that she's holding, and that unfortunately for her can't last, is giving her that quick glimpse of what could be, that quick gasp of fresh air before she's shut back inside, you know? Mm-hmm. And that to her is more valuable than anything else in the world.
So like you said, Ren is really the opposite of all of that.
Yes.
You know, she's her life has been very secluded for reasons, and she suffers from not having been put into, you know, we're all a product of nature, nurture, environment, right? And, you know, she suffers from, you know, not having two of those, two out of three, right? So, you know what I mean? So, you know, like you said, sort of that made her a little bit more trickier to write, more challenging anyways. Is that seems to be then, usually you write what you know, right? And I'm wondering, you know, when you said that, I thought, it made it more challenging for you. Is that just because you've sort of had, this is going to sound awful, but so many things handed to you you know, as a, you know, we are a privileged people sometimes, right? Was that sort of very though mirroring sort of your growing up, like loving family and maybe didn't always agree with your choices, but like, you know, you're leaving school and stuff, but you know, were you, is that sort of where that came from? The challenge of it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely,
like, how do you put yourself in that position to write that her so well? Cause I thought you wrote her very well. And there's another thing I want to talk about to her after.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I definitely did have a rather privileged upbringing. I had mm-hmm. a wonderful family, incredibly supportive, caring parents, firmly middle class. So in that sense, yeah, the creature comforts were never something that I needed to worry about or knew that I needed to worry about. I think with Ren, though, there's so much of her that just desperately wants to help and to be loved for anything and to be one step ahead so that she can validate herself by helping others. And I wouldn't say that that's not dissimilar to the way that I am sometimes. I also crave love and validation and acts of services and gift giving and things like that are ways that I, you know, try to get that. But I think for me with Ren, the biggest thing that was a challenge was her intense distractibility, her true attuneness to absolutely everything. I am so very like, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, but I'm incredibly like straightforward and focused. And if I'm doing the task, I'm doing the task. And if I'm, you know, listening to this thing, I'm listening to that thing. I'm not paying attention to X, Y, or Z. So for me, it was hard to like follow the idea of how she would be kind of pulled along by that magic within her and how that would drive her in different ways. And it wasn't until I think my second draft of this that while I was writing and I think my wife was like making coffee and then there was a sound upstairs and then there was a smell and she like went through this whole process while I'm just like sitting here typing and I was like, oh, you're Ren. And it was then that I finally was like, oh, I get it, because she has just like the most ridiculous nose. Like she can smell what the neighbors are cooking, like the floor above, and she can hear the swish of the wind and she's always looking and and this and that. And as like, it was like, I finally realized, oh, I have one of those. She's right here.
That's so
and
funny.
I had to channel it from there.
Really quickly too, just because you mentioned it, how many drafts did you end up doing?
I want to say, let's see, I wrote the first draft and then I rewrote it again very quickly because I was like, nope, that's not right. And then right. We did a pretty serious overhaul in the first round of revisions. So I would say about three and a half ish.
How was your outlining?
This is one of the first books that I did more outlining on, and yeah. I am grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you hear that a lot from people. Yeah. They're like, people are like, now I outline. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely still kind of like I'm still a pantser because I'll still figure out things while I'm writing the scenes, but I've gotten better at least figuring out where the scenes go and why.
Sure.
So that's been helpful. Let
right.
me
just say. Yeah, well, that's really, that helps with plotting in this book. This book is plotted very well. Just a sidetrack there, but back to Ren. So how would you describe Ren's mental state? Because she's got some tics, right?
Yeah, she's fragile, but she doesn't necessarily know it. I think of Ren as sort of like a baby bird who she's really not ready to fly alone, but she doesn't know any different. So she's like, I can do it. I can, you know, whatever. And I just am watching with, you know, my hands over my face, like, please don't try to fly yet.
Right.
She's not hard, and that's okay. I don't think that every person needs to be hard. And we, you know, see in Tamsin so many sharp edges that it's nice to have Ren who's a little bit softer, a little more pillowy and a little bit more careful and tender. And, you know, when she starts out, she has, you know, never even left her village before. She has this magic that's a part of her that she can't tell anybody about. But like with Ren, she's so focused on what's left of her family that she doesn't even think about the idea of sharing a secret with anyone because she doesn't have anyone to share a secret with. Like she's very isolated, but earnest, if that makes sense.
It does. What about the, you know, one thing that sort of is, it's throughout the whole book up until she cuts her hair, is she has this sort of nervous twitch thing where she pulls on her hair. Mm-hmm. What was the idea with that? Because I remember reading this thing a long time ago. I remember that movie, What's Eating Gilbert Grape? Mm-hmm. And Arnie, the lead character, right, Leo DiCaprio, he was always sort of like tapping his nose. Mm-hmm. And then I learned later on, because I'd read the book and that wasn't really in the book, and I'd learned later on that was his way of processing information. When he thinks, when he processes information, he taps his nose. And so I kind of got that from this with the hair pulling. And a lot of times when Ren is processing something, whether it's a new emotion or a new thought, is when she sort of like starts pulling on her hair a little bit. And it's like, oh, that's an interesting little sort of like twitchy thing.
Yeah, I wanted to have something that traveled with Ren and kind of was a piece of her. And so you learn pretty early on that her hair is the same as her mother's, and she doesn't really have anything left of her mother, but her, you know, she knows it would devastate her dad if she cut it or changed it. It's the same color, it's the same length. So she kind of carries her hair with her as this, you know, tribute and homage. And to me, her tick and her sort of decision to not decide to do that, it's, you know, it's not her decision, it's just something that she does. For me, it was always sort of like an anchoring of pulling that root and anchoring herself back to what comes first, which is family,
right?
Because, you know, she says early on that she wouldn't necessarily choose to have this hair,
right?
But she does it out of duty and she does it out of love. And so I think for her, those are kind of the two biggest things in her life. So when she kind of reminds herself of the physicality of that hair, she pulls it, she's like, duty, love. And that helps her process because that's kind of how she's always viewing things.
Perfect. The just do it already factor is very high in this book. And I don't mean it as in it. I just mean having the courage to even just let yourself fall for somebody, right? To fall in love and then expressing it. And again, not even physically necessarily, but just saying the words out loud. This thing you made me earn it, which is great, which is fine. Well, circle back this to plotting, you know, because again, I think this book is plotted very well. What was the idea with that? And like, how much was taken out? How much was, you know, did you add in through editing and stuff with, as far as that goes, of like, when's the right time to have these two sort of like, you know, understand that what's happening is happening?
Yeah. So this was something I thought,
because that's the book, right? Let's be honest. I mean, listen, right. And you window dress it with some great stuff, and the cast of characters, like there's a crazy, yes. crazy exes, and you know what I mean? Like, and the witchcraft in this is fantastic. The magic system in this was great. The witchcraft is incredible. You know, these are all great things, but I mean, the book is the cover. Look at the cover, right?
Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a love story at the heart of it. But I think that I always wanted it to take that long, which I know is mean, because sometimes you're like, oh my God, please, like what? Come on. Yeah. Yeah. And I totally get that. I think that like, it was important for me to have these girls take their time, because neither of them really know who they are at the beginning of the book. And I wanted them to get to know themselves and kind of be a little bit more firmly established in who they were. And while they get to know themselves, they get to know this other person, and they realize that they can be complimented in these ways that they never expected. And I don't mean, you know, literal like compliments, like, oh, you're so pretty, but the idea that, you know, Tamsin can't see beautiful things, but Ren, you know, will wander off the path to pick a wildflower and tuck it behind her ear. And, you know, along the way, they start to change the way they communicate. Like, you know, they're climbing this mountain and there's this, you know, sunrise or sunset, and Ren starts to describe it to Tamsin, and Tamsin gets mad, but also like she's glad, because she can see this person who's reminding her of what she doesn't have, but offering her enough to want more.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was really important to take my time because like, don't get me wrong. I love a good Insta love. I really do. But this story was so much about each of them and had the way that they got to fall in love that I wanted a lot of it to be about the falling.
Yeah. And that's, and I agree. Like I don't want the opposite either. I don't want Insta love necessarily either. I mean, what's nice about this book is that you're not furtive about it at all. Like it's very clear, you know, sort of, you know, where things are going or very early on, but you do let that, you let the process sort of work itself out. Right. Which I thought was really great. Almost the point where, I mean, I they might sell this as enemies to lovers, but that's pretty loose.
Right.
I would say for sure. Right. So,
and I mean, also just like coming from like truly a sapphic sense, like there is double the uncertainty when you're falling in love with another woman of, you know, there's so much of the heteronormative idea is that like, oh, you know, does he like me? Does he not? But when you're a woman falling in love with another woman, it's not only, oh, does she like me? But like, does she like me like that? And so they're almost, it almost takes longer to even be able to see it. Was she flirting or was she just being nice? Like, I don't even know. Like, is she even queer? There are these extra little hurdles and bars to duck under and mazes to navigate. And I think that like, I kind of wanted to give them that time as well, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, well, that also makes for a ton of just like really, you know, levity a lot of, right? Because there's so many cute, charming moments, funny moments in this book, you know, on the, especially during the journey portion of it, right? Because Ren, God bless her, couldn't read a signal if it was a lighthouse, you know what I mean? So she's just
she tries so hard.
Yeah, and listen, that's the beautiful part of her, right? I mean, it's, you just, that's, you fall in love with her pretty much right away because of that. I mean, it's for other reasons too, but there's this, you let this whole process play out, but it's such a, you know, like I said, it's not sneaky. It's fun. It's charming. And it makes for a lot of really nice moments between the two of, I mentioned the single small bed and, you know, just exactly. Sort of like all these, and you know, it's when you put these two people like this so close together and they depend on each other so much, that's, you know, really, and then just sort of expanding this into a real world sort of sense, it's when you really get to know somebody, right? And you learn all their quirks and isms and all those weird little things that make it special. Again, we've just, this is very, very unspoilery, this conversation. There's so much in this book that is fantastic. Yeah, I mean, like, there, you know, there's a mother character who's just great. She was my favorite, actually. And some ex-girlfriends who show up, and the magic, of course, you know, as everyone can imagine, this patriarchal, you know, monster, of course, rears its fucking ugly head again. And there's, you know, you sort of deal with that a lot, which is really great. So yeah, this thing from top to bottom, I thought was really great, plotted really well, great character work from top to bottom. Your system of magic, I thought, was really entertaining. It all leads to a really, really great, exciting third act, which I think people are really going to enjoy. So congratulations on that. It's a great debut. I can't wait for people to read it. I know people are going to love it. And just read a couple of, you know, reviews already, and people seem to be really enjoying it. So, but like you mentioned earlier, we're already on to book two, the sophomore book. If you thought the pressure was on this one, David, right? The second book, that's where all the pressure is. You know that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you continually hear from everyone. And you're like, oh, I'm sure it can't be that bad. And then you get there and you're like, oh, no, it's worse.
You can't be a one and done, right? God, no, not in publishing. But all right, tell me, you know, this is really early in the game. I know you probably can't tell me anything at all. Just, you know, so Sophie and the Bone Song is the name of your next book. It's not even out till 2022, I believe.
Yes.
And the summary is very quickly. It just says, after losing everything to an undeserving rival, a young musician sets out to expose that her rival's newfound musical abilities stem from an illegal use of magic. But what she discovers will rock everything she knows about her family, music, and the girl she thought was her enemy. So there's your enemies to lovers right there. Am I reading too much into it or what? You even say enemy in the summer.
There's a very strong rivalry, shall we say.
Let's put it that way. Is there anything else you can say about that book other than what I just said? And if you can't, that is completely understandable and fine.
Yeah, from a high level, this book is really exciting to me and very personal in a way. We spent the early part of this conversation talking about music, and this is kind of my homage to my songwriting. And it's a book all about music set in a fantasy world, which I've just had so much fun with. And I have to say that for someone who hasn't written a new song in like 3+ years, the number of lyrics that I have written in this book is very impressive to me.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm really excited, and you get kind of that troubadour vibe and the performances and the feelings and more complicated families and more sapphic romances. So it'll feel familiar, but also I'm hoping a little bit new as well.
Is it contemporary?
No, it's another second world fantasy.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Well, I'm in. You just handed in. Where are you with it then? You just said you handed in.
I'm working on my second round of developmental edits right now.
Okay, perfect.
So we're getting there.
How are you finding your writing? Better now? Do you think you feel like you've gotten better, I'm sure, but how would you rate it? A lot better?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like
because your brain, you know, there's that Sapir-Whorf theory, right? That, you know, the more you do something, your brain changes, and the more the more language you use, it changes the way you think. Some of this stuff should just be coming out of you now at a much more efficient and natural way.
Efficient is a fun word.
Isn't it?
I don't know about that one. No, but I will say, like, I don't think I could have written Sophie before. Like, I think Sophie had to come after Sweet and Bitter Magic. Like, I don't think I could have done what I'm doing in this book now if I hadn't done Sweet and Bitter Magic, which to me feels truly like success in that sense. Like,
And then is that from what a pure confidence standpoint?
And I think also from a craft and storytelling point of view as well, like, I really appreciated your comments about the plotting of Sweet and Bitter Magic, because it was something that I worked very, very, very hard on, and a skill that I think I really developed within this book that I didn't truly possess before writing it in the same way. So, so I'm taking things like that and now bringing them into my other projects. So from like a truly purely craft sense, absolutely. From a confidence sense, I don't know about that.
Right.
Because I think
when it's done, you'll know better when it's done.
I was gonna say, I think I dealt more now than I ever did. But from a strictly craft sense, absolutely, I can already see the difference.
Right. And sometimes you'll notice too, I've talked to authors when they're, you know, even debut authors, when again they're in the same position where they've already started on their next projects and they're already seeing a change in their writing, and they're like, yeah, if I could go, not that, you know, you can, but if I could go back and rewrite certain scenes from my debut book, they could understand, not to say they would, you know, they think it would be any better or any worse, just that they could understand the craft a little bit better now. And they understand that, you know, even sometimes small changes can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're always going to have those scenes that are like the one that got away of like, there's always going to be something that you're like, oh, I wish I could just, but I also think that that's kind of some of the beauty of like, for writers to finally truly have to give up that thing that we've poured so much in of our heart and soul into, you know, our final draft, final, final draft, final, final, final draft. Like, truly there will be a final draft, and we have to be okay with letting that go and moving on to the next. And there's something poetic in there, I'm sure.
So March 9th, we don't like to support pandemic profiteers around this place. So where would you like people to buy a Sweet and Bitter Magic? Do you have a local indie shop you would like to shout out or anything like that?
Yeah, I would love to shout out Greenlight Bookstore in Brooklyn.
Greenlight, yep.
Yeah, I love them. I've gotten so many rewards over the time that I've lived in the neighborhood. So shout out to their excellent rewards program.
Perfect. And then, of course, any way you can get your hands in this book, please do. Not everybody is able to. Some people live in weird remote places and don't always have access to certain things. So get it however you can. But March 9th, like I said, this thing is a lot of fun. And What really quickly too, one of the things I liked about it was it. There's a couple spin-offs there. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. Like,
I have a secret dream book that's a spin-off of this that I will probably never get to write, but I will hold close in my heart just in case.
I'm going to ask you after we start recording what it is, because yep. I think if it's one of the, maybe there's more than two. I had two jump out right away. Sweet Bitter Magic, March 9th. AdrianTooley.com is where they can find out everything there is to know about you that you want revealed. Adrian, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Good luck getting any sleep the night before your debut.
Thank you.
You won't get any. You know that, I'm sure.
I know.
And enjoy it, though, and enjoy the weeks that follow. And we'll talk to you in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Adrian for chatting with me today. All jokes aside, she is very cool. Expects nothing and earns everything. And because of that, I only see good things for her in the future. Sweet and Bitter Magic is out now, so head on over to AdrianTooley.com to find out what she's got going on and how to get a copy today. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen. Head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.